pacification, peace to that country, and it was about how to mobilize the people of West Africa against French imperialism. And through French and Ivorian machinations, the Thomas Sankara was killed. The military in Burkina Faso still has some of the sentiment and consciousness of Thomas Sankara. But what was being said by the leader of Burkina Faso is now reflected all across West Africa. In Senegal, the anti-French, anti-imperialist sentiments are very high. And the highest anti-imperialist sentiment in Africa at the moment is to be found in the Sudan, where the revolution in the Sudan has mobilized the people into resistance committees that overthrew the military. So Burkina Faso, Sudan, Mali, and now Niger are countries where the room for developing the political consciousness of the people and strengthening the anti-imperialist bloc in Africa is very strong. Last week, the EFF in South Africa had its 10th anniversary Congress. And if you listen to the speech of Malema, the anti-imperialist speech, you get a sense of the sentiment all across Africa about imperialism, about the need for African unification, harnessing the resources of Africa, and to ensure that Africa is not drawn into any new wars. What we are seeing in Nigeria is that the Nigerian government, which many in Nigeria call the present government illegal, this government in Nigeria needs an intervention in Niger and in Burkina Faso and Mali in order to get favor from the United States of America so that Tinubu can be in power. The people of Nigeria, they're against this military intervention. The Senate of Nigeria, as you said in the lead up, said they should not intervene. They said there should be dialogue. The people of Nigeria, the people of Niger are one. So what Burkina Faso leader, what the Burkina Faso leader said in Russia at the Russia-Africa summit is a sentiment of the peoples all across Africa about Western military intervention in Africa.
And yet, interestingly, Professor Campbell, the African officers who are involved in these 11 coups in the last 15 years in West Africa, including in Burkina Faso and Mali, have been trained in the United States.
And trained by this money that the United States is supposed to be spending on counterterror. I think that is why we need greater investigation in what the United States is doing in Burkina Faso, Mali, Niger, and Guinea, and to call for closing of the United States Africa Command and for there to be greater relations between the civilian societies in Africa and the peoples of the United States. The United States Africa Command needs to be removed from Africa because the United States Africa Command has been responsible for part of the sequences of militarism in West Africa.
And finally, if you can talk about the U.S., I would say, intensified interest in Africa right now as it tries to compete with Russia and, even more importantly, China. If you can talk about Africa as a kind of proxy for this global competition.
Yes. First of all, the African peoples have been fighting for self-determination. The African peoples have been calling for the unification of Africa. The African peoples have been calling for the African currency so that they are not sending billions of dollars, up to $48 billion every year to Western European countries. The African countries want freedom of movement. They're creating the Africa Continental Free Trade Community. The United States, France, the European Union, all foreign powers are against Africa uniting and creating roads and railways and ports for the African peoples. The overthrow of Gaddafi in Libya was directly related to the plan by the African Union for an African currency. An African currency that prevents the outflow of resources from Africa is a threat to France, the European Union, and the United States of America. And that is why the United States is creating the bogey about China. And the United States is intensifying militarism in Africa. Next, this war in Ukraine is a terrible war against the peoples of Ukraine and that region. But that war in Ukraine is another step of the militarization of the planet, where the United States is supporting the fascist elements in Ukraine. Now, Africans have taken a position that they do not have any dog in this fight. They want peace in Ukraine. The United States is threatening Africans with the countering Russian malign influence in Africa. They've actually passed a bill in Congress to coerce Africans to support the United States and the NATO war in Ukraine, when Africans are calling for NATO to be accountable for the destruction of Libya. In South Africa in particular, where there will be the BRICS summit the next week, where Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa are coming together to break the domination of the United States over the world economy. The United States is threatening the South African government. It's not by accident that Victoria Nuland went from West Africa to South Africa. They've been threatening the South African government and making allegations that South Africa is selling arms to Russia. All of these are fabrications. The United States has now leaning on Kenya to send soldiers to Haiti. The United States is calling on Kenya to sign a strategic trade investment partnership with Kenya to break up the plans for greater cooperation in Eastern Africa. So the United States is running amok in Africa based on challenging China. The African people do not need the United States to tell them to challenge China. What the people of Africa needs is to plant food to end hunger. They want jobs. They want roads. They want health care. And they want tangible resources internationally to fight climate change. This is the most important crisis globally. So we, in this part of the world, need to join with the African peoples supporting peace and reconstruction, supporting the replenishment of Lake Chad, and do not support France and the United States in the destruction of Africa.
Horace Campbell, I want to thank you for being with us, professor of African American Studies and Political Science at Syracuse University, chairperson of the Global Pan-African Movement North American Delegation, author of Global NATO and the Catastrophic Failure in Libya. Next up, we speak to the Ukrainian pacifist Yuri Shelezhenko, who's just been charged by the Ukrainian government with justifying Russian aggression days after his apartment was raided. He says he is a pacifist. Stay with us.
I pulled into Nazareth, was feeling about half past dead. I just need some place where I can lay my head. Just grinned and shook my hand. No was all he said.
The wait by the band. The group's founding guitarist and leader, Robbie Robertson, has died at the age of 80. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The Ukrainian pacifist Yuri Shalyshenko has been charged by the Ukrainian government with justifying Russian aggression days after his apartment was raided and searched. Yuri is executive secretary of the Ukrainian pacifist movement, member of the European Bureau for Conscientious Objection and World Beyond War. He's appeared on Democracy Now! A number of times and has vocally opposed any escalation of the conflict through fighting or sanctions. Yuri Shalyshenko has vowed to remain in Ukraine and continue his peace work from behind bars if he's imprisoned. Well, he joined us Tuesday from his home, and I began by asking him about his interrogation that he had just come from an hour before.
During this interrogation, investigator provided me a copy of request to the court. He asked the court to apply to me home arrest. Here it is, some materials disclosed, and I must say that from this pile of papers, I see that indeed surveillance was started a year ago. And it was started when I published as human rights defender legal aid document called Human Right to Conscientious Objection to Military Service. And they considered it as a threat to national security. They considered it as a threat to mobilization for armed forces of Ukraine, and they started to surveil me. Then there was a peace agenda for Ukraine and the world. I prepared this statement based on scientific analysis of conflict escalation between Russia and Ukraine, from friendly divorce after dissolution of Soviet Union to Russian aggression and full-scale invasion. This statement is indeed calls for ceasefire, peace talks. It calls for critical thinking about any images of enemy. It calls for prevention of human rights violations by armed forces. Also, this statement calls to protect the right of everyone to refuse to kill. And this statement was adopted by meeting of Ukrainian pacifist movement on the International Day of Peace, 21st September last year. I sent it to several officials, including President of Ukraine and Parliamentary Commissioner for Human Rights, and both Office of the President and Office of Parliamentary Commissioner for Human Rights, instead of considering a statement on the merits, as any democratic institutions, democratic leaders should do, give a reply, they just sent it to Security Service. And I must bring your attention to the fact that Security Service of Ukraine is directly subordinated to President of Ukraine according to law on Security Service. So when Office of President, instead of considering appeal, petition of the people to discuss possibility of peace, to seek diplomatic solutions, to be guarantor of human rights as President of Ukraine should be according to Constitution, instead of considering it when Office of President is sending it to Security Service, it looks like direct involvement of President of Ukraine, Volodymyr Zelensky, into organization of political repressions against those who are speaking for peace. It is horrible, and it is inappropriate in democratic society.
Yuri, I wanted to ask you, how do you respond respond to the state saying that you are justifying Russian aggression?
It is total nonsense that a pacifist is accused in justification of war for anti-war statement. This peace agenda for Ukraine and the world, it denounces Russian aggression. It quotes United Nations General Assembly resolution, which denounces Russian aggression. We must understand that any violations of international law are not appropriate in contemporary international order. We should strengthen democratic and legal foundations of international order. And, you know, I was searched and now I am brought to this repressive system for my alleged justification of Russian aggression in time when our government organized the summit in Saudi Arabia to promote so-called peace formula of Zelensky. And this peace formula, in fact, is a formula of permanent war. Key point of so-called formula of peace of President Zelensky is Kyiv Security Compact, which was developed by working group of Rasmussen Yermak. Rasmussen is former NATO chief. This Kyiv Security Compact includes Western military supply for Ukraine during decades. And this Kyiv Security Compact also includes total mobilization of Ukrainian population to war.
How do you see the war with Russia ending?
I know many scenarios proposed from very pessimistic to very optimistic. Of course, my dream is that people in Ukraine, in Russia, everywhere in the world will think seriously about necessity to transform their societies toward nonviolent governance. Everywhere, current structural violence will be repressed with more progressive, nonviolent democratic governance. It could put end not only this war, but all wars in the world. You know, since this war is planned for decades now, and financing for this war is lobbied and in some ways planned for decades, it is very serious. This long-term attitude to hope could be very adequate to long-term negative thinking of warmongers. As for more traditional approaches, of course, it would be great if Russia just leave Ukraine. We have wonderful slogan, Russia out of Ukraine, NATO out of existence. If only they happen, it would be the best scenario. But it could happen only in the case if serious changes will be started in society. Now, even more conservative variants. For example, this ceasefire and peace talks, some sort of frozen conflict. It would be, of course, very painful option. But if instead of taking rational choice to stop the war, just to stop it not because of choice, but because of exhaustion, and this exhaustion could happen because we have tens of thousands cripples. We have a growing number of people who don't want to fight, and Russia have it and maybe more too. I am not saying about killed people. There are a lot of killed soldiers and civilians. Ukraine have destroyed cities. This war should be ended at least by humanitarian reasons. It is humanitarian necessity to seek ceasefire and peace talks. It is very conservative formulation. Ceasefire and peace talks. It is not needed big changes in the world. I seek to ensure nonviolent governance, to ensure peace literacy of everybody, to ensure that all people know something about nonviolent conflict resolution. Ceasefire and peace talks, it is very conservative. Have at least that. But of course, we need to work for more.
Ukrainian pacifist Yuri Shelezhenko has been charged by the Ukrainian government with justifying Russian aggression days after his apartment was raided and searched. Next up, we speak with one of the 10 peace activists just arrested on the runway at an air base in the Netherlands, where 15 U.S. nuclear bombs are stockpiled. Stay with us.
All of a sudden, I could hear somebody whistling from right behind me. I turned around and she said, "Why do you always end up down at Nick's Cafe?" I said, I don't know. The wind just kind of pushed me this way. She said, "Hang the rich."
Somewhere Down the Crazy River by Robbie Robertson of the band. He's just died at the age of 80. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. We end today's show with one of the 10 peace activists arrested on the runway Tuesday at an air base in the Netherlands where 15 U.S. nuclear bombs are stockpiled. The activists entered Volkel Air Base and knelt on the runway, glued to the runway copies of the Treaty on the Nonproliferation of Nuclear Weapons. The nonviolent protests were part of the International Peace Camp and Week of Action and came on the week marking the 78th anniversary of the U.S. atomic bombing of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, August 6th and 9th, 1945. Today, the activists arrived in Germany to protest at the Buchel Air Force Base, which is preparing for the delivery of replacement nuclear weapons, including the new B-61-12 thermonuclear gravity bomb, now in production in the U.S. We're joined in Luck, Wisconsin, by John LaForge, the co-director of Nuke Watch, recently served a 50-day sentence in Glasmoor Prison outside Hamburg, Germany, for protesting U.S. nuclear weapons stationed in Buchel Air Base. Also with us, Susan Crane, one of the anti-nuclear activists arrested at Volkel Air Base, just arrived at Buchel Air Base for today's action. We welcome you both to Democracy Now! Susan, if you can talk about why you're at Buchel and why you were arrested at Volkel, why you were there.
Well, thank you, Amy, for having us. We're very concerned about the legality of the United States sending nuclear warheads to the five countries in Europe, particularly to the Netherlands and to Germany, because it's against the Non-Proliferation Treaty. The treaty says that nuclear countries can't share, as it were, their nuclear weapons with non-nuclear countries, and non-nuclear countries can't accept these weapons. So as far as we're concerned, the Volkel Air Base, which is in the Netherlands, is a crime scene, and the same with Buchel Air Base here in Germany. They're both crime scenes where international law is being broken, and we want to bring that to people's attention.
Three of the U.S. citizens who participated in this week's protests at Volkel Air Base in the Netherlands were banned from entering the European Union for a year. Passports were stamped with an entry ban. The significance of this, Susan? And were you one of those three?
I was not one of those three, but it's pretty significant that a country would say, oh, you were part of a nonviolent direct action saying these nuclear weapons are a crime, and therefore we're not going to let you go anywhere in Europe for the next year.
I want to bring in John LaForge, the co-director of NukeWatch. You just served a 50-day sentence in Glasmore Prison outside Hamburg, Germany, for protesting U.S. nuclear weapons stationed at the Buchel Air Base. Talk about your reasoning for doing that and your time in prison.
Sure. I mean, the prison is a minimum security place with very easygoing conditions there. The fine that was imposed for going into the Buchel base a couple of times in 2018 went unpaid deliberately by me. And so the court system there imposed the alternative jail sentence. We argued in trial that, as Susan pointed out, the stationing and the transfer of U.S. nuclear weapons to Germany is an unlawful act, a violation of the Articles 1 and 2 of the Treaty on the Non-Proliferation of Nuclear Weapons. And we were convicted anyway, although we offered to present expert witness testimony to explain the international treaties that forbid this transfer, this ongoing threatened use of U.S. nuclear weapons from Germany against Russia. We argued the case presented primarily by the international law professor Francis Boyle of the University of Illinois, who points out that nuclear weapons, their components, and their delivery systems in Germany and everywhere are principally just instruments of international criminal activity, repudiated and prohibited, as he says, by international law, including and especially the Nuremberg Charter, the Nuremberg Judgment, and the Nuremberg Principles. And as a matter of fact, today, we wouldn't recognize as property the right of a gas chamber in Auschwitz. And so we consider nuclear weapons not property at all. And so the attempt to interfere with the threatened use of these weapons is justified as an act of crime prevention. Now, those offerings we offered to have this and other expert witnesses, including a retired German judge, Bernd Hanfeld, were refused by the court. And for that reason, we've appealed from the German Constitutional Court, its highest, to the European Court of Human Rights, complaining that the refusal to hear this expert testimony prevented us from presenting an adequate defense, and we should be allowed to have a...
John LaForge, we're talking to you in Luck, Wisconsin, where you've returned home. Susan, we just have 30 seconds. You're at Buchel now. What are your plans for today's action in Western Germany?
Well, we plan to go to the base and hold some banners and hopefully talk to the people and ask them not to fly the planes. And, you know, they don't have planes there right now, but they do have the nuclear weapons there. And what's happening now is they're working on the runway to get the...
We're going to leave it there. I want to thank you, Susan, for being with us. Your phone line is breaking up as you're on the U.S. Air Base at Buchel in Western Germany. Susan Crane, one of the anti-nuclear activists arrested at Volkel Air Force Base in the Netherlands, just arrived at the Buchel Air Force Base for today's action. And John LaForge, co-director of NukeWatch, now back home in Luck, Wisconsin. That does it for our broadcast. I'm Amy Goodman. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org.
The Polygon Gallery presents Meet Me at the Gallery, a daytime art program dedicated to enriching the lives of seniors and adults in our community with monthly get-togethers inspired by the gallery's current exhibitions. Visitors are invited to drop in on the first Wednesday of every month at 10 a.m. to make new connections with art and each other. The activity for August 2nd will be a low-impact dance class inspired by the exhibition Jeremy Shaw, Phase Shifting Index. To learn more about this event, visit thepolygon.ca. Amiga branca e nua, é sol, é sal, é sul, são mãos se descobrindo em tanto azul.